listening to New Layer, a design podcast with Tanner Christensen and Jasmine Friedel.
I'm excited to talk about this today because I think it's one of the more important things that we as designers or design leaders need to do more.
One of the most important things? One of the more important things?
I think it's one of the most
important. Oh, are we stack ranking now? This could be interesting.
So the topic for today's conversation is around making time to find space or otherwise just deliberately think as part of the design process. So this is thinking.
Thinking, making space to think.
Making time and space for thinking. So the reason I think this matters a lot, particularly for new designers or just generally people who are new to the design space, is we often look at design as a role of outputs, right? You see like nice wireframes, you see workflows, you see user journey maps, you see nice pixels and animations. But a lot of the work that designers do, especially product designers today, is actually the stuff that's a little bit more hidden and invisible, the thinking, I think.
Okay. This is interesting because I'm thinking of the class I taught a couple of years back in interaction design, and everything has an artifact. Everything has an output that you generate to demonstrate that you've done that part of the process. And of course, school is something where, you know, you have to because you need, you know, milestones along the way, and you need things to be graded on. And then you take that into the real working world as a place where you have all these tools that you can use, these parts of process as tools that you can use that generally have outputs. And so what you're proposing is that not everything has to have an output?
In a way.
Question mark?
Yeah, okay. I think that's accurate in a way. So let's talk about a little bit how this topic came up for us. I've been writing and researching about creativity for a long time. And one of the core things that I've found in my research and writing was that often what prevents us from being creative or from uncovering creative ideas is just giving ourselves time and space for ideas to kind of percolate in our minds. And I see this all the time, especially in design, where designers, like you just said, they think that the way that they demonstrate value or the way that they come up with the best ideas is just to slog through the output, right? Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, first of all?
That the way that designers come up with the output is just to go through the process?
Yeah, it's just to put things on a page.
I mean, already my mind's going to like, is this a creative endeavor or is this not? Because maybe it doesn't even matter. Like there's times where just generating, like if you're sketching and you're doodling for logos, for example, you just need to keep going and keep generating until something clicks. There's sometimes with problem solving where you need to go away and take a walk and not think about it. Like not think about it, intentionally like do the thing that we're telling you not to do or that we're telling you to do.
But I think that's exactly what I'm describing. And I think maybe there's not necessarily a fallacy, but there's something there where when you go off, let's say to a museum or you go for a walk or you do something that's trying to essentially step away from the work and not think about the work, you are actually enabling a lot of your subconscious brain to do the processing for you.
Right. It's the incubation piece.
Exactly. And there's a lot of research that proves this is the case. And you can dig into this or I can leave some notes in the show notes or something. Like research consistently shows that when we give ourselves deliberate time away from an activity or work, our brain is still processing that work, right? It's the reason that why when you're really stuck on a problem, some of the best advice is to sleep on it, right?
Right, right. Well, this is something I really struggled with in grad school because I was working full-time and I was doing school full-time. And so I would block these long blocks of work. Like on Sunday, I'm going to get in 8 hours of work and I'm going to do all my classwork for the week in that 8 hours. And it would create no space to think. And so, you know, I'd get frustrated and I'd get stuck and I'd sometimes cry, sometimes take a nap because I just wasn't going anywhere and I was tired. But it was very rare that I was able to like sequence things where I could have some sort of downtime in order to do that incubation.
It sounds like to me, you maybe didn't have deliberate thinking time, but you had it regardless, right? When you say like you took a nap or you kind of like broke down, those are obviously frustrating times, but don't you view those as times where you kind of gave yourself time to and distance to think?
At the cost of having, you know, trading off the time to execute. So I don't, it wasn't really valuable time. I think it would be different if I could have said, you know, hey, I'm going to do 2 hours a night for 4 days and then have some, like, when I go to work, then I could, like, you know, be letting things run in the background. I think you just, like, in that case, it's a trade off of an hour. So I didn't find it, like, super valuable.
Okay. This will be really interesting because I think we have maybe some different perspectives on this. So I'm excited to dive in further. So what immediately comes to mind for me right now is when we have designers in a team, they want to so desperately show their value for the company, for the team, that mm-hmm. they're just consistently, again, working on those outputs. Sometimes at the cost of not giving themselves the ability to step away in any capacity, right? They're so ingrained, they're always at their desk, they're always just, like, working through these problems, that they fail to recognize stepping away might be the best thing they can do in some situations. Some examples of this are when you're, like, working through a problem and you've looked at it for so long that you fail to see other perspectives of the same problem or the same work, right? So that's not to say you can't do good work by just focusing entirely
just
on the project.
Doing the work,
right?
Yeah.
But you don't really know what you're missing by not stepping away. And stepping away can be something like, again, going to the museum, going for a walk, going to have lunch with a friend or a coworker, just any of these kind of things that to deliberately break up your process and give you some space to think either consciously or subconsciously.
So how do you, I'm trying to put this together. Like, how are you seeing this play out in, say, the day-to-day of a designer's work? Like, let's say you clock in at 9 and you leave at 6, you know, how does this fit into a process when it's like, oh, you need to, by the end of the week, have 3 directions that we're going to evaluate and choose from?
That's a great question. And our favorite answer applies here, which is it depends. Of course, it really depends, right? The project could be very large. It could be very small. It could the definition of the project could be very different. What I think is modern designers today, a lot of the work we do is actually thinking, right? Especially if you're in any kind of established company where, for example, there's a design system and you already have some of the core components that need to be pieced together, your work as a designer is not necessarily to try to come up with new elements or interactions. Your job as a product designer in that example would be just to figure out the best means to enable users to do what they need to do, right? So go ahead.
I think that what would help me is, like, how are you defining thinking?
Thinking is evaluating.
I mean, we know what thinking is, but how, in this context, yes. Like, what does thinking as a designer mean?
Right, for this exact instance. I think it comes down to, it's like putting a puzzle together in my mind, where you have a problem, in this case, in this metaphor, it is a puzzle, a picture, a physical, tangible thing, and you need to find a way to collect all the pieces first and foremost and get them on a table, and then you need to kind of start putting them together and trying to see what pieces fit where. And in my mind, what this thinking is, says, look, what's the best strategy for tackling this thing? Should I start on the edges? Maybe that's the best way to put this puzzle together. Are there large, obvious pieces that I can put together? Let me put those together. Are there examples externally of what I could do here?
So you're talking about, like, processing, exploring, which is a little bit different from the stepping away piece, but we're suggesting that maybe the stepping away allows for better process and exploration synthesis.
Yeah, the best example I can come up for this, I think most people should be familiar with, is if you say a word out loud right now, let's say foot, and you just repeatedly say the word foot, after a while, that word becomes almost nonsensical, right? Your brain kind of struggles to understand what that word means. Are you mm-hmm. familiar with this?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very common thing. I think designing can be a very similar process, where when you do repetitive actions or you look at just one problem or process for so long, it becomes almost nonsensical and you fail to see anything else outside of it or what that purpose or the meaning originally was. So it's really helpful to stop doing what you're doing occasionally and just give yourself that break, that space away from the thing. So suddenly you can think about the same problem or the same process or the project from just a new, different perspective. Does that make more sense?
Yeah. I think what I was trying to, like, figure out is this something that we're comparing to, like, design thinking? Which is the, when you think of, like, D-school type things, it's like the empathize, define, ideate, prototype, and test. It's more about, like, how we're actually using, creating space within each step of the process for these things that we've been talking about.
Yeah. So great call out. As part of the typical design process, you already have thinking ingrained in all these steps, right? Of course you're right. thinking about the problem. Of course you're thinking about how to evaluate the research, how to evaluate your ideas. How do you know whether or not this flow applies and the prototypes, et cetera, et cetera. You are incorporating thinking. What I'm saying is a necessary step for doing your best work is to implement deliberate time away to think. So stepping back from that process, stepping away from any of those steps at any stage, just to give yourself that space and some time to get some fresh perspective, to really analyze, is the process you've been using, is that right? Is it working for you? Is there something that maybe you need to go back to or readdress? Are there other ideas out in the world that might help inform or inspire your work?
So let's talk about some steps in a design process where this might be applied, because it is a little bit fuzzy to me. And in the back of my head, I'm like, I'm waiting for some teammate to come up to me and being like, I need thinking time and I'm going to take 2 hours out of every day to think. And I'm like, okay, I need to know what that is to understand if you're going to be paid to go on a walk for 2 hours. So I think knowing like how you would apply this would be really helpful.
It's hard to say, honestly. So,
well, like if you're saying that, you know, we need to create space for thinking, what are ways that you've done it in the past couple of weeks?
So I don't think I'm the ideal example. I'm just one person living at one life, working on certain types of projects. But the way that I've been doing this is daily, I will take 30-minute walks just at any time of the day, whenever I have a nice little break. I have time reserved on my calendar to go outside and take a walk. And what I've found is that if I'm working heads down in a project, and even if things are going well, I'll have this scheduled time on my calendar to just get up from my desk, go on a walk away from everybody, away from the office, and just have some time to walk around. And what I've found more often than not is I actually don't think about the problem. I don't think about the project, but I am thinking about other things. I'm thinking about my day, thinking about my career, thinking about the office space, thinking about the world around me. Mm. Oftentimes what will happen is I'll see just, you know, people walking their dogs or coming to the grocery store or picking up lunch. And in my example, a lot of those use cases of where I see these people just living their lives is really inspirational. And it's so cliche to say, it's so like almost bland, but it's a very good reminder to me personally that sitting behind this computer doing this work, like, it really impacts all these people outside the world, right? And so it's kind of a grounding thing for me. So for me personally, when I come back from those 30 minutes, you know, I may not have an answer for the problem, but I feel inspired and energized. And now I'm ready to go
right.
with the work again.
Okay. I'm getting something here. So I think, like, if we were to put, like, how do you create space to think within your design process? I think one of the first things, and we're saying that you need to do, is like get your brain to a fresh place where it can begin the thinking. Even if there's some incubation in the background, even if there's some processing that you don't know happening, like making sure that you're moving away from the work in order to create that space. Something different that I do when I know I've got to tackle something and it's going to take a lot of processing. Like right now I'm working on a workshop for our team around commercialization. Like, how do you understand how design ties into our business success? And it's something that I'm not, you know, super fluid in yet or fluent in yet. And so I need to like really dig in and learn and then figure out what the narrative is. What is the story that I want to tell that is engaging and educational? And so the first thing that I did to create space for that was I created a plan. And yesterday I had the most productive day. I went and I started on a new app, a new to-do app called Things, which was recommended to me by our principal designer, Gustavs, and I love it. And it in itself creates focus by creating projects. And so I was able to bake in a little bit of time to explore. And I had to do that as my first step, and I sequenced that as my first step to like even explore outside of what we have internally for knowledge. Like, do I understand the basic terms of business and revenue and growth and things like that? And that's something that would be easy for me to just jump past and say, hey, I've got to actually just do the thing. Like, let's just put the workshop together. But instead of like jumping to that creation piece, I made goals and then I explored. And I found that actually propelled the work after substantially. And if I hadn't done that, I would have been so nimble on my feet and wouldn't have the right content and would have probably had to come back and do it over anyways.
That's a great example. Another thing that immediately comes to my mind is team offsites. And this is just like when a team gets together and they go like golfing or sailing or just to the park or the museum. And I think when we, at least when I think about offsites, for a long time, how I viewed them was, okay, it's team bonding. And of course it's team bonding. It's an opportunity to get to know your peers and your team and a little bit more of a social, less formal gathering. However, I think that that time away is also immensely valuable for building up the energy reserves and the inspiration of the team members as well. So a good example that I heard from my manager who formerly worked at Google is they would, you know, just their team would just take random days, almost random, to go to a museum and just walk around. And an interesting insight from that is at the end of the day, you can come together as a team and talk about the inspiration that you saw at the museum or the questions you had. And I think this is something that many team offsites don't participate in, but they should do more often, is don't just have the offsite, but come together at the end of the offsite and say, kind of, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? How do we interpret this as related to our work that we are doing? And like proactively tying those things together. Because in doing so, what you're doing is you're saying, we're going to take time away from the physical work that we're doing. We're going to get out of the office. We're going to come together at the end of this activity and start trying to tie together those things. So the paintings you're seeing in that museum, the artwork that you're seeing, what inspired you? What questions did you have? How is looking at those materials and how those materials come together? How does that maybe inform your work, right? Mm-hmm. Or your relationships? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I guess I see that less as inspiration, because I like, for the tools that I work on, I wouldn't go to a museum and be like, yeah, you know, this artist palette or the, you know, techniques in which they used or their life experiences don't really inspire business software decisions, but they might like actually sort of motivate me to create in my own way. The other thing I was thinking about is you were talking like, I wouldn't discount the idea of building relationships on those sorts of offsites as a piece of this creating space, because I guess the way I'm thinking about it, when I was thinking about like my to-do list, I'm like, I'm getting all the tools ready. I'm getting all the content ready. I'm getting my knowledge ready, but I might need to be getting some of my partnerships ready too. I remember a couple of years ago, I was working with a PM who he and I just did not see eye to eye, couldn't communicate well. And he was super, super junior. I was fairly senior at the time. And my boss was like, you guys just need to go get drunk together. And I don't think that's like a super great recommendation for solving problems. And we didn't go get drunk together. But, you know, one of the things that we did start to do is just, you know, talking more personally and getting to know each other a little bit so that we could help that collaboration. And I think that's another sort of investment that's maybe not like directly related to thinking or creating that space to think or to process or to prepare, but I think it is useful. I think we're talking about investments here. We're talking about investments in the things around your actual output, the creation of output that help you create that output more efficiently and at a quality way.
Yeah, that's well put. I would say like in the instance of going out for drinks or dinner or some activity with your peer, that does actually not just build those stronger social bonds, but it will impact how you think about your own work. It could help enlighten you into how you partner with this person and how you communicate with them and what they're responsive to.
And I can't tell you how many times we have had like happy hour or something at work and we start talking about work and we just get really excited about it. And you're like, oh yeah, we should go do this. Like we should fix this problem. And that's really exciting too. That's a different way of like creating energy and motivation and inspiration. But
yeah, so I don't want to, I am not at all discounting the value of just the social connections you can have in an offsite or even onsite, just midday. Like, you know, I mentioned I do walks. Occasionally I'll bring someone along with me and like then we can both openly talk about the world around us and what we're observing. I want to quickly go back to what you said about not being inspired or not directly tying your work in business product design to like going to a museum. I think this is really important because there are often connections that our brains will make either consciously or subconsciously that we cannot predict. And I think that what often happens is we discount like the value of these inspirations. So you might say like, you know, there's not really a lot of value in my team going to a museum, hypothetically. I know you're not saying this, but you know, we do business products. We don't need to go to some artsy fartsy place.
And that's not what I said.
Again, what I said
is like, it would not directly inspire my work or our work.
Yes. However, there are absolutely possibilities that what you encounter there may spark some idea or some inspiration or something, right? And what I'm trying to get at is it's just too easy to discount these activities or this time away from the work as like a business expense, or like, you know, we could be doing other work. We could go have conversations with the businesses.
This is stuff I think about all the time. And very personally, I run my day pretty lean. I don't know if that's the right word.
Tight.
Lean in hours.
I would say tight.
Yeah. I lean hours, lots to do. And so I start at 8 a.m. and I go straight through till about 4. The only breaks I usually have are anytime I fiercely protect or anytime meetings get canceled on me. And when I evaluate what I have to do, and this is director level shit, like this isn't necessarily what everybody has to deal with, fortunately, but I've already gotten to a place where the things that are on my calendar are things that need to happen. So I've already done that prioritization exercise. And so because I've already done that evaluation and I know that things I'm doing are important, anytime I trade anything off, it means I lose out on something important. And so if I decide to take an hour walk or take an hour for lunch, that's not, you know, catching up on something, that means I don't get that hour back because I'm not going to tack it on at the end of my day. And so that's what I was mentioning when I say, you know, if my designer would come to me and be like, hey, I want to take 2-hour walks every day, I'd be like, that's cool. Like, tell me how this is going to help your process. And I think there's some valuable things. In fact, my team actually, Salesforce in San Francisco now has this beautiful second floor, open walking park. I said it in San Francisco already. And it's really like peaceful. There's like lots of people, but it's just like you get trees and grass and fresh air, in the middle of this like concrete jungle. And they go, you know, frequently, maybe once a week or so as a team and go walk. And like, I'm super supportive of that. But if it were like, you know, I'm going to block 2 hours every day to just like not do anything, I'd be quite, and only work 6 hours a day and be like, But I think this is like, we're talking about the space made to just like, to be inspired, to incubate, to see things out there in the world, to refresh. Like, that's all well and good. I think there's another piece of this, which is like 4 steps in the process. How do you make that space? And by that, I mean, I think a lot of times you get like, you'll get in your team and your PM or your engineer will be like, I need this by Friday. And you're like, that's kind of unreasonable. It would probably take me 4 weeks to do this well. And you need to short circuit a process. And this happens to designers all the time where it's like, it's just about delivering. And so then they're like, just make me the mock and, you know, we should do it this way. And you're like, no, I need to like step back. I need to really understand the problem. I really want to generate a couple options and then I want to like polish and make sure they're at high quality. And so I think there's a second scenario, which is like, how do you create space there so that even on that abbreviated timeline, you have processing time. Are you relating at all?
I have so many thoughts.
Okay. Start with one.
Okay. Before I get to that thought, I want to backtrack for 1 second to touch on something you mentioned a minute ago, which is everything we're talking about may not, I would debate this, but it may not apply to people in managerial roles, right? We may be talking strictly about...
I think it has to. Like, I actually think it does. And I'm saying like, there's a trade-off, but my example was a little bit different than yours. It wasn't going and walking outside, but it was like creating planning space. It was so valuable. And the few times where I do get to go outside or I do get to get a refresh, it's so valuable. I think it's rarer that can be something that we own. I think the more you end up working with, you know, higher level peers and stakeholders, the more your time is less your own. And so like if you have as an IC, you have a team meeting and there's 3 people who are meeting together, maybe it's your PM, your EM and yourself, you can usually schedule that at different times and sort of flex and you can make sure that it's on one edge of your focus time so that you don't have these blocks. Like when you're at a leader level, you're kind of at the mercy of all the other leaders. And I think that's okay, but it like you just have less control. You have more control in some ways, but you have less control, I think, as far as time. Or at least I've experienced that from my past 3 roles.
And what I'm seeing is that designers, individual contributors, so non-people managers, they have very similar pressures, right? Where they typically they'll have a lot of people asking them or requesting them for things. They'll have their leader, their manager. In some cases, they'll have a client or a customer. And so they have a lot of pressure too as well, right? It can't.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is like in this case, I'm trying to bring it back to that example. In this case where you do have demands, I think that the one thing you have more control over is your time.
Exactly. Yeah. We're aligned on that. So again, even in the face of these pressures, I think it's really valuable to just find 10, 20, 30 minutes to give yourself some space and just let your mind think. Right. I think that's really important. So kind of, again, going forward now to what we were talking about a second ago, what comes to mind to me is, have you heard about this study that was done? I don't know where it was done, but essentially it was a ceramics class. So dealing with a lot of pottery and things.
Okay.
And the course instructor split the class into two groups. Are you familiar with this yet? One group was tasked with creating as many pieces that semester as possible, just spit out as many ceramic pieces as possible. The other group was told that they would be not measured on quantity, but quality. And so their objective was to create one single piece, the best quality they could. Mm-hmm. So they looked at the end of the semester, how everyone was graded, and do you know the outcome?
I do not.
The students who were tasked with creating just one high quality piece of work far, far got better grades than the group who produced more quantity.
Generated more, yeah.
Yes. And so the thinking behind this is that by deliberately spending time on one specific task and really going over it again and again and just focusing on that one piece, they were able to create higher quality work than the students who were tasked with just outputting as many different things as they could, right? You follow me on this?
Yeah, I'm having thoughts.
Can we hear them?
Yeah, I know. Generation and evaluation has been something I've sort of been discussing with a lot of our design leaders at Intercom. And it's because like I when I look at our process, I think we can, there's some things within generation and evaluation that we can do better. We tend to do something pretty rigorous, which is like generate three, pick one. And I don't think that that's bad in any ways. I think like, I think that there's times where you should generate one thing. And I think there's times where you should generate 20. And I think the trick is being able to choose when to do which. And I like, I'm like the outcome of this story would be always think more so you can do less. And I just like, don't want to interpret it like that.
Yeah, that's not true.
Yeah. But I do think that, you know, and generation and evaluation is a great time when you need to think like, and it's sometimes you can call it divergence and convergence. Like if you're thinking of the double diamond, but the idea is like, how do you really, really go big to either understand the problem or generate solutions? And then how do you narrow down to really refine the problem and then, you know, get fewer of your solutions down to the highest quality. And so when you think of that sort of like thinking in those spaces, it's like, no, you really have to think as you go big to understand the problem. And you also have to think as you like refine it and think of this as like research synthesis. Like there's a lot of thinking there. In generation, there's a lot of thinking that needs to be done as when you're looking at like solutions and in order to understand that you're not just like generating three that are kind of all the same. And then one is the obvious no. And that's like more of a sort of salesy thing where you're like, well, we obviously wouldn't do this one, but we generated it just to show you that it's available. Like that's not a great thing to show. But just to understand like, what is the widest variety of things we can do? What are the different, you know, stories or solutions we could tell in this, you know, huge spectrum of solutions. And then really there's thinking to be done in like, how do we actually determine which is the best one or the best couple? So I just think there's like, it always goes back to intentionality. Like so much of what we do goes back to intentionality, but when you have the right intent, and I think from your story, it's like, you know, this was a test, sure. But if the folks who were told to just make as many as you can had an intent of like, because we're going to figure out the ins and outs of how the clay works, and then we're going to evaluate that. That could have been a really interesting story. But, and if the quality one is obviously like, we really want to think and come up with the best piece possible. That one's a little bit more explicit, but you have to know why you're doing it in order to make it well. And I think that why is where that thinking comes in. Like, hey, why did you tell us to just do a bunch?
Yeah, absolutely. Another concept that comes to mind for me on this point. Well, so let me double down on what you just said, just to make it clear, because I may have misled a few people with my previous story.
Love the story. I just like my head went, oh, shit, people are going to be like, I'm just going to do one direction. And I'm no.
That is not the point of the story at all.
This was a test. This was an A-B test.
Exactly. Generative design is really important. And I think part of why it matters is because we as designers, we may think we know what the solution should look like. We may like concept one variant and be like, this is it. This is the one I want, and stop designing more. But the reality is our brains really struggle to understand things we can't see in front of us. So even if you know the concept's not going to work, it is so valuable to just get it on the page anyway, right? As one example. So I do think like generating a lot of designs, no matter what, no matter where you are in the process, that matters a lot. What I'm trying to say is, once you kind of have some of these concepts or the information, you've done the research, you have the journey maps, whatever, then you need to kind of give yourself space to see those things from a new perspective, to really think about them in a different kind of lens. And I think that's what I'm trying to underline. So I forgot my thought.
That's okay. You inspired me to think of something else. So, you know, we talked about sort of walking outside and talking with people and, you know, how that, you know, in a museum context or whatever, an outdoor context, sort of like loosens you up and might inspire you in unknown ways. Feedback is another piece that I just started to think about, was like, you know, hey, when we think about thinking time doesn't necessarily being saying, oh, I need one day to think on this. I need one day to be alone in my own head, because you will get blocked, and you will get blocked by your own limitations. You will get blocked by time. You will get distracted. But bringing other folks in, especially when we're talking about like the design work itself, bringing folks in to get feedback early and often, and we talk about this in the context of critique, but I think for that thinking, how do you help that process, that, you know, the analytical nature of what you need to do or synthesis or whatever it is, by bringing other folks in? And so critique is one way to get feedback. And that's why we're always welcoming of folks who bring like a Google Doc into critique and say, I need to talk through this problem we're going to solve. We never shut anybody down who's like, well, I don't have mocks yet. And often like people are afraid to come to critique until they don't have mocks, because there's just such a, like in the design community, I think that's just, you know, the expectation, especially when we look at siloed designers, like of course, visual designers might not have needed to really understand the business problem first. But when we have product designers, which are end to end, you really need to come in and say, I understand this problem. And then you can have other folks who ask questions about your understanding of the problem. Or doing whiteboard sessions with your PM. That was one of my favorite things to do. Like just, you know, tug on my PM's shirt sleeve and say, hey, can we whiteboard this? Turn around, grab a mobile whiteboard and just like talk through it. And then my engineers would come around and we'd talk through it, and we'd move so quickly, because we'd be able to eliminate a lot faster, but we'd also be able to generate a lot faster.
I like where you're heading with this. Another thing that we've just started doing on my team is what I call popcorn critiques, which is essentially, you know, we have a set critique time every week for an hour, and yet one of us might be sitting in the middle of the week kind of stuck on a problem and needing some refresh. And so we'll just kind of quickly go around. Hey, is everyone available for a 5-minute chat? Come over to my desk. Let's talk about this work together. And we can just an impromptu critique. That's really helpful as well. And just again, to reiterate this point, some people might view that as like just standard process. But when you step back from it, what you're really doing is kind of giving yourself time again to think about the work. And you're doing that through the lens of critique.
Yeah. Two thoughts. Jam sessions were another sort of thing that we've done, which is, you know, I keep these separate from critique, because critique is about giving feedback on the work. A jam session is like, let's generate ideas.
It's like brainstorming.
Yeah, like brainstorming, but really sketching. I mean, I love these because I don't get to sketch much anymore. So I finally get to get like my hands dirty again. So that's another way. But I think the interesting thing here is like, when we think about a process, and I'll go back to the double diamond, there are probably other processes, but that's the most common one that I can think of for product designers. When we think about a process, there is no place in the process where it says do a jam session or get feedback on critique. It really is, because these are the things that don't have output. And I think this goes back to what you were saying at the very, very beginning, was, you know, there, most of the things and that we do in the design process, like my school example, have an output. It has a problem statement. It has a project brief. It has, you know, synthesize insights from users. It has, you know, the product feature requirement list. It has a site or a sort of like a journey map. It has wireframes. It has low fidelity mocks, high fidelity mocks, all the way through animations. And those are all artifacts that you can show as step in the process. But nowhere between those does it say you need to step away and like refresh, or actually when you're diverging, do you realize you need to converge again and like generate, and maybe that's where a jam session comes in, or you know, you actually need to diverge a little bit quicker because the time frame is a week instead of 4 weeks, and so that's maybe where the critique comes in. So I think there's like the takeaway here could be something around how do you apply these ideas of, let me see if I can capture them, these ideas of sort of stepping away. And that's, I guess I'm just thinking of that as the incubation piece. Maybe more intentionally looking for inspiration, exploring, evaluating. And I think those like capture the brainstorming would be exploring, evaluating would be getting feedback. So where and when do you incorporate these across your process? And how do you actually, you know, physically make time for that? And that would be my synthesis of what we mean by creating space for thinking in your design process.
Yeah, well said. As we're talking about this, I kind of had a realization, and I'd love to know your thought on it, which is really what we struggle with, what anyone struggles with in the creative circle, what this is known as, there's a very real mental shift that occurs when you go from creating something to evaluating something. Right? Those are two very different mental models. Mm. In fact, you can't do both at the same time. We want to believe that we can. A lot of people might be exceptional at doing this, but the vast majority of us, we cannot create and evaluate at the same time. It's the reason why so many of us struggle to write, is because as we start writing, we're like, ah, it's not quite the right word, or, you know, I have typos and stuff. And the reality is how quote unquote real writers get their job done is they write everything and then they go back after they're done and evaluate.
Right.
And so I think when we talk about where to incorporate these deliberate like spaces or perspectives or critiques or whatever you want to call it, I think when we should inject those moments, for me, it's walking around, is when we need to transition our frame of thinking between I'm creating something, I'm in the weeds building, and okay, now I need to switch to an evaluation mentality. One of the best ways to do that is to step away for just a brief moment, get some clarity, get some space, get some perspective, and then come back in with a different mentality.
You have to do it really intentionally too. I'm thinking of like, for me, it's at the end of my week, I try, and it happens on my best weeks, it doesn't happen on my work weeks, but I try and reflect. I try and plan at the beginning, I try and reflect at the end. My teammates set goals every week and they evaluate whether they're done at the end of the week. And you can set daily goals too, but I think it's a similar practice where the evaluation is better if you know what you're planning to evaluate at the beginning. And so setting a goal, even if it is like the sort of processy goal, which is like, I actually need to generate a bunch of things so that, you know, I can take them to people to evaluate, then maybe the reflection is, are these the right things to be taking? Or what's the quality of these things? Or, you know, did I address the problem correctly? Like, where is that moment for thinking? But it usually works best when it's not just sort of like a quick, I'm going to do this, but it's something that's planned and something that's intentional and something that you make part of your process. And I think something important here is, especially for new folks who are starting out, is you see these processes, and many folks, when you know you're in an interview and you're like, ask, what is your design process? You're like, well, first I figure out the problem I'm going to solve, and then I make sure, you know, I know who it's being solved for. And those are all the right answers, but we've said this before, it's like, that's not exciting or interesting because that you've literally pulled the process from like standard process. I think the interesting piece comes when you layer on, or one of the interesting pieces of your story and how you work comes when you layer these on. And, you know, when you tell a story in your portfolio, maybe at an interview where you say, you know, hey, I did the standard process and I went and I generated a bunch of concepts, but then I needed to take a moment to think about them and reflect on them and what I realized. And then the what I realized part is the interesting part, because that's when we really get in and learn about, you know, your competency as a designer and what you value and what you get excited about and, you know, the things you see and maybe the things you don't see yet. And so you're actually crafting a customized process. And this is something I think we've talked about before, and we will more if not, but you know, design process is standard for a reason. It's a standard so that we can learn it, we can know the steps of it, but very rarely do you follow it to a T unless you're in consulting or at an agency and that's what you've, you know, sold. That's the practice that you've sold. But usually it's something that you need to know when you might need to go back and redo a step. You might need to skip a couple steps. You might need to insert little reflection moments or processing moments or that space. And so I think there's really something interesting here that we all can learn from is how do we make a sort of a realistic but still planned process for each different scenario.
Well said. And there are really a lot of ways we can do this, right? We gave a few examples, whether it's getting up from your desk and doing a walk around the block for 5 minutes, whether it's sitting down and articulating or writing down like a strategy or plan. There are other things you can do as well during these moments when you might need to have a shift or where you need to...
Is caffeine one of them?
Going for coffee, absolutely. I think that's a great one. In fact, that's probably...
Coffee is magic.
That's the one I see all the time in my own team where... you know, someone's just stuck and the quickest remedy to get unstuck is just like, let's go grab some coffee and let's just chat.
Yeah. I'm actually like, I know we're getting close to time here, but there are times where folks get into a flow state and you just are on a roll. I've actually seen that, you know, usually that's great and you feel super productive if you have the right goal set. I've actually seen people waste a lot of time in flow states too, where it's like, you go all in on one direction. And then at the end, when you evaluate, you realize that that direction is not solving the problem. It was really fun to do, but it actually you spent a whole day on it. And that happens frequently. So I wonder if even in those flow states, there's moments where you're able to, without like breaking that flow, but actually able to plan in like checkpoints in order to hold yourself accountable. And I think there could be some accountability to all of this. Like, are you doing the space for planning or the space for refreshing and getting ready at the beginning? Are you doing the right, are you analyzing at the right times? Are you looking back at the whole process and checking yourself? I don't know.
Yeah. So at the end, making time for just thinking, reflecting, getting new perspective, it can be valuable. It's a matter of doing it intentionally. Working with your team so they understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. And in some cases, just experimenting with different things to see how taking those breaks or that space might help you.
Yeah. I think that's really important because everybody designs slightly differently. We learn from each other. We take little pieces that work for us. Sometimes we try and emulate somebody else's process and it just doesn't work for the way our brains operate. So I think that experimentation is really important. So I think the encouragement here would be to like try a few new things. Like, is there one new thing you can try this week in your process that gives you a little bit more space? And it doesn't have to be super disruptive to your team. You don't have to say, I need a day to do this. It might just be like, I'm going to, you know, on the down low, I'm going to like just put 30 minutes on my calendar and block it. And it's going to be for this and then hold yourself accountable to that.
All right. That's it for today.
Cool.
Until next time.
Okay. Sounds good.